everybody. It's time for a brand new episode of Twin Bitter! Woo! Today on the show, we're doing something a little different. This is our first round of,
I pick.
Me making, like, you. We decide! You decide. Yeah. We decide! Like, and by we decide, I mean one of us decides. What the other three are going to watch and whatnot. new thing where one of us picks something for the other three, and then one of the other three picks something for the person who picks something for them. So
in this case, Richard picked two things for us to watch, and I picked something for him to watch.
Yep.
That we all watched anyway.
That we all watched, yeah, which
yeah,
I'm sure...
Everybody ended up watching everything. It's weird.
Yeah.
Now, look.
Because other than books, that'll probably be how it is. With books, it'll just be, only the people that have to read need to read.
Yeah, pretty much.
But today, it's going to be Psycho Pass, Gennaro Bucci's cyberpunk thriller in a dystopian future where criminals are executed on sight, possibly being crooks.
Fun and profit.
Or Arca. Crooks. And Mel Brooks, live at the Geffen Theater. And also Hannah, 2011 Joe Wright thriller. I guess it's a thriller, right?
I'd say thriller.
Yeah, thriller.
I think if you have dubstep, you can be considered a thriller.
Dial in.
It's murder. Big Beat. It's not dubstep.
Big Beat?
It's called Big Beat. It's the Chemical Brothers, Big Beat.
Oh, okay.
Because she wanted to know what that style of music
was. Well, I learned something today. I should have learned a few things. So anyway, learning a few things on this episode. I'm your host, Richard. Over there, now about to take his copy of Hannah to Half Price Books, it's Jason.
Already did it.
Did you really? Well, good. See, we got something out of it.
Yeah. And it helped me pay for Natsumi's Book of Friends.
His aura is clear. It's Michael.
Woohoo!
Because he's criminally asymptomatic.
Well, I've got a bright future ahead of me then.
And let me tell you about my friend Richard Pryor. It's Chris. As you know, you were good personal friends, right, Chris?
Totally.
Half those kilos of coke.
Yeah, I was going to say, you did half the coke.
All right, Psycho Pass.
Yes, let's start with Psycho Pass.
Kinzel,
what'd you think?
Okay.
You watched a manga.
A manga?
I did.
He calls it manga.
And there are a couple of things I
fucking doofus.
Hold on. I actually liked. Everybody ready to shut down the show now?
Call it a day and go
home. It's good, so you should like it.
There were a couple things that I thought were really weird. Like, I always forget their names. The main girl, her little Navi-like apartment, artificial intelligence.
Yeah, that's part of the world building, though, because you got to understand the whole point of everything is to keep people happy.
Yeah,
like this
it's kind of a weird and twisted story. I loved the guns and how that they interacted with their, I guess, contact lenses, or maybe it was just their eyes.
It's just their eyes. It does a retinal scan and a finger.
So before we get too far into it, can you explain what Psycho Pass is, Richard?
Sure. Right. Psycho Pass is like the new franchise / show. Well, one of the new, I guess. It's a show by Gennaro Bucci, the guy who wrote Madoka that we've talked about in the past.
Oh, boy.
And he wrote the movie Expelled from Paradise, and he's written a Psycho Pass movie that's about to come out as well. And he's also the guy who did the screenplay and the novel.
Wait,
for
so is it going to be an
stuff.
Anime movie?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know if it was going to be like a live-action movie.
No, that'll be 5 years down the road.
Okay.
And it takes place, like so many other things, it's a dystopian future where society is horribly corrupt.
At the beginning of episode one, the first thing that I thought was weird, they're going in on the city, big, huge, futuristic city, because it's what? I looked it up. It's, 100 years in the future?
Sure.
Give or take.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's all these wrecked, sunk ships in the ocean, and yet you have this really super futuristic city. It's like, why couldn't they clean it up?
Oh, because it's a natural barrier from Japan and the rest of the world.
Yeah.
It's like the Great Wall of China, except it's
apparently the movie's going to deal with some of that because they're solving a murder on like an oil rig or something. But Japan is like the trial area for this concept of psychopaths, which are psychological analyses, whatever, that test things called a criminal crime coefficient.
It reads your aura.
Yeah, it basically reads like your, biorhythm or something, and determines like if you're capable of committing terrible things. It's sort of like Minority Report in the way that like they predict
exactly
whether or not you're going to do
stuff.
That's exactly
what I was just going to say, it's kind of like Minority Report.
Well, they wear that on sleeve. Like, yes. There's, like,
yeah,
that
it's,
scene,
it's there.
That scene in Kingsman where Samuel L. Jackson and Colin Firth talk about, like, you know, well, this isn't that kind of movie. Like, there's a scene like that exactly in Psychopaths that... Normally I would hate, but I really liked it on here. Where they have you ever read this thing called "Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep"?
Yep,
I thought that shit was very funny.
Like they just
are you a big fan of Dick?
Yeah, yeah. They just talk. They just like they don't even try to hide it, but it's interesting in that they play in this world where there's like a very low crime rate, but it's because like if you test at a certain point, like they just throw your ass in jail or they kill you.
If it's high enough, they
mostly kill you.
Yeah, they mostly kill you. That was a problem I had in the second season of Psychopaths, which I, you know, if you guys can watch it if you can, but Urobuchi didn't write it, and you can tell because it's not good. It's sort of a hot fucking mess.
So, Kenzel, that's why you have a happy little squid as your personal computer? Because
it felt like Navi.
Well, like, their society is, like, basically, like, what if, like, the concept behind Fringe had run totally amok, where there is zero morality behind science other than just pleasing people or letting people have what they want.
Yeah.
So,
and it's the computer system that is over the psychopaths is run by, it's called Sybil.
Yeah, the Sybil system.
The Sybil system, and it's supposed to be infallible.
Yep. Which we find out how, like, the way that the Sybil is programmed and what makes it able to determine how people become psychotic and whatnot is actually explained in a really neat way, but that is the show's major twist. And
yes,
I don't want to even touch ruining it because it's super cool.
How does the show start?
That's a good question because it's been about a year since I've watched
it. The show starts with a young rookie who did very well on all of her tests.
You're a loose cannon.
She could have gone. No, she's
turn in your badge.
She's the opposite of a loose cannon.
Yeah, she's very by the book.
Yeah, I know what you're doing. But she. Who,
the guy's a loose cannon.
She took her tests, her civil servant tests, and pretty much had the pick of any government job, which in this future, government jobs are the cushiest, highest paying, best life jobs that you can take. And she chose to join the police force, which her friends that she eats horribly unhealthy food with.
I like that, though. Yeah, I always when characters have weird eating quirks, like Salieri Amadeus.
Yeah,
and he likes chocolate a lot.
Your daily calorie intake was such and such.
Yeah. it was, you know, they'd eat horribly, horribly unhealthy foods. And they were like, why did you join this crappy-ass cop division, you know? And she goes up and she meets her supervisor, who's technically her partner. And he kind of says, oh, yeah, here are these guys. They're criminals, but they're our hunting hounds. Don't treat them as people because they're garbage. Don't listen to what they say. Shoot them if you have to. But, you know, they can do stuff that we can't because we don't want to be exposed to a higher criminal coefficient.
They're criminally asymptomatic, but they're not actually criminals.
Right.
Which an interesting bit of background that's not in the show, but is apparently in like the hour long versions of the show is like the redheaded guy,
mm-hmm.
the one with the braids in his hair.
Wait, so there's hour long versions of the show?
They did another, it's kind of a recut of it.
Yeah, they recut it and like put in some interstitial stuff, but I haven't found a way to watch it like on Hulu or anything.
It's supposed to come out in Blu-ray like in a couple of months.
Which is why I don't own the series yet.
Right.
So glad that I bought it.
Hey, you got a nice box.
Yeah. But it's $50, so.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I might still get it when that becomes cheap.
Because you can fit all of it inside of the one box.
Exactly.
Not the season two.
Yeah, you put the movie and the other set in there, but. Yeah, the youngest hunter guy, yeah, he tested as criminally asymptomatic when he was 8.
Oh, no, they talk about that whenever him and him and the girl are in the lobby and they're talking about, and he's been pretty much criminally asymptomatic all of his life.
Yeah.
And then they talk about that a little more
during the confrontation.
Yeah, during the confrontation that he gets.
During the riot, which the riot is like the best story on the whole series.
Yes.
Like, but I think someone called like episode 17 like Urobuchi's masterpiece or something, and that's the one with the riot going on and the, you know, the androids flying down the street that have like, you know, been
V3 Rebellion is.
So, but you've got an interesting cast for these hunters, these hounds, if you will. There's an old grizzled kind of detective guy.
He's like my favorite character.
Then there's a loose cannon, as Jason,
a loose cannon.
I like the old guy.
And then there's a very quiet, semi-gothy girl. And then there's the wholly inappropriate redhead who, you know, just is perverted. And, you know, so they kind of all fit into these anime tropes. But, man, whenever you find out their backstory, Jesus.
Is Emmy the lady hunter's name? I can't remember, but the episode with her backstory is one of my favorites.
Yes, and then later like you find out there's another part of the team.
She was in Pris and the Replicants.
There's another part of the team who is a ginormous-breasted hacker who smokes constantly.
Oh, yeah, the tech lady.
Yeah, the tech lady. And I'm pulling up, because I can't remember their names.
Like, I know Akane, and I know Tsujimono? Is that the bad guy? I can't remember. Boy, part of the reason Psycho Pass Season 2 suffers is because the bad guy is not as good as the bad guy in this. The white-haired guy and his creepy, is he Korean assistant?
I think.
The guy whose eyes you can never see. Is he Chinese?
Chinese. Okay. He's Chinese.
I don't know. So overall, Chris, did you like this? Or did you just like parts of it?
You know, I actually did kind of like it. I think the story is like actually really interesting, and I like the whole concept of it.
Goal! 3 points! See, him just saying that means he loved it, but he can't admit that he liked anime.
Oh, whatever.
And he knows, see, that's why he's laughing, because that's what it is. Like, he really loved this, he thought it was great, but he just won't say, yeah, I liked anime.
Like, this is the AAA cream of the crop show, I think, for people to watch, no matter what kind of thing they're interested in, depending on like the level of violence they can take, because it is relatively violent, and you know, they trip over that in the second season to where the violence no longer has a purpose and kind of becomes trashy and stupid. But in this, like, yeah, the Dominator gun's killing people, and the way they do
is blowing them up.
Yeah, it's super gross and utterly horrifying, but it's just to show how completely fucking depraved this supposedly moral society is. It's
If they're going to go that, if they're going to have that have a crime coefficient, they don't deserve to be part of the society, so they might as well just be eliminated.
Yep.
Now, the whole crux of the matter, though, is that the Moriarty of the show cannot be read.
Yep.
He can flat out walk up to somebody and stab somebody, and his crime coefficient does not go up.
Criminally asymptomatic, that's what he is. Yeah. I'm sorry. The hounds are
latent criminals.
Yes, they're latent criminals. That's the term. Because there's just a fair amount of terminology on the show, but it's easy to remember.
Yes.
It's not overwhelming.
And so that's part of the thing. Now, the backstory that you get is just as important, in my opinion, as, you know, the flashbacks are just as important and interesting as the story that is currently going on.
There's no padding on this.
In that, you know, number one, you find out that the loose cannon was a detective, and what caused him to go latent criminal was one of his what are they called? What did they call them? Enforcers?
Yeah, enforcers.
Yeah, one of his enforcers who he had gotten to be good friends with, who I also think is the reason why he smokes now. Because you saw that guy smoke, but Loose Cannon guy did not smoke before that. He got killed in a very brutal way.
Let's call him Loose Cannon guy.
Yeah, well, you know.
Hey, he's important. Like, they're doing a thing with him in that movie.
And
I guarantee it.
Oh, yeah. And
When is the movie coming out?
It might already be out in Japan.
I think it's out this month.
Yeah. It's very soon.
Which means it'll be a year before we get it.
Probably.
Then, of course, the best revelation, in my personal opinion, and I don't think this is too horribly spoilerific.
Then stop. That means if you think it's not, that means it is.
The detective enforcer, who he is.
Yeah, it's a spoiler. Don't you dare fucking say it.
We're not talking about spoilers, Hooper, over here.
Whenever you find out who the detective is, it's really cool. The detective enforcer.
There's some very, very cool payoffs in this show.
There's an entire episode devoted to the gothy girl.
It's one of my favorites.
And
she goes to like a resort to help reduce her crime coefficient.
Well, apparently it's like an asylum.
Yeah, but it looks like an asylum.
Yeah, where all of them go, and that's where they all get recruited.
I have those Ernie Ball strings downstairs right now.
But yeah, she's a guitarist. And yeah, that episode actually takes place right after a major thing happens in the anime, so it's kind of a breather episode. It's kind of a, okay, let that process, and while you're doing that, here's a story of the olden days.
Back in the day.
Oh, sorry, it came out in February, it looks like.
I wonder how it did, because like I know that the finale...
Michael, you know an awful lot about the olden days.
Yeah, I do.
When they showed this on, like, I don't know, like, the Nipponichi television, like, building or something, like, where they were playing it through the wall with, like, through the window with, like, a wall of TVs and, like, playing it in the lobby. Apparently, like, the lobby was packed and they couldn't get, like, you know, it was, like, violating the fire code or something. It was so popular. Like, it was a big deal. The show was very, very popular, justifiably so.
And it has, the openings are awesome.
Everything about the show is awesome.
The endings are great, but the openings, like
I love the theme songs. The two OPs were,
oh my gosh, they're amazing.
Just great songs.
And the imagery of the opening is very spoilery, honestly, if you know what you're looking at. But if you don't, it's like, oh, I wonder what the fuck's going on here.
Yeah, which I think that's part of how well written the show is,
yeah.
Is that they can show you things, but like without the context of it, it doesn't mean a lot.
There's just so much. So much character development, and it's real natural character development. There's nothing that feels forced in this. It's a very tragic story. I mean, it's a horrible tragic story because really and truthfully, this is a true dystopia. You don't think about dystopias being everybody's fucking happy all the time, but then. You find out why everybody's fucking happy all the time, and you find out who the judges of people being happy all the time is, and it's fucked up. And I believe that is
Gen Urobuchi.
Gen Urobuchi. His middle name is fucked up.
Yeah, his nickname actually is Urobutcher.
Yeah. Because the other big anime Kenzel that Richard had mentioned that he did was... Puella, Magi, Modica. Yeah, Modica
Magica. I just say the whole thing.
Look, let's not get crazy here. I like one anime. Let me at least get used to that first.
Modica's really good. I don't know if you would be into it, Chris.
Yeah, well, because there's some contextual stuff that you would have
to understand.
Not until
we get them fully ingrained.
I mean, I don't know if you have to see a lot of magical girl stuff to get it, but at the same time,
I
think it stands by itself, but at the same time, I think you get more out of it.
You kind of have to accept...
that conceit of a magical girl.
Show is batshit. That's why I like
it's fucking
all of his stuff is batshit, which is why I'm such a big fan of this guy.
Yeah, he's great.
Now, Kenzel, you would actually like Fate Stay Night and Fate Zero, I think, because it's history. History.
Yeah.
History. Hey, man, Ryder on Fate Zero is like one of his best characters ever.
It is.
Let me tell you something about that, because we got to that point where you see what his
Noble Phantasm.
Noble Phantasm.
Yeah, I know.
How can he lose?
Now you gotta watch.
You gotta watch to find out.
But
it's
still,
great.
Oh, and whenever him and Lancer and Archer sit down to have a chit chat about what it means to be a king. That was an awesome episode.
There's some very cool stuff in Fate Zero. I kind of wonder what it would be like watching it by itself without having seen the previous Fate's Day Night.
That's where I'm at.
Because there's some reveals that you know are coming that set up. And, oh, it's neat. It set that up. It's something that like works.
It's great.
Actually. Really interesting and very both ways.
The only thing that I really remember from the little bit of Fate's Day Night that I watched was that the little girl in Fate Zero.
Oh, Ilya? Or wait, no.
No.
Ren.
Ren is in Fate's Day Night.
She is.
And her episode where she frees the kids.
Ren's Big Adventure.
That was awesome. That was an awesome episode. It was excellent. And Caster's...
Urobuchi writes really great lunatics.
Caster's...
He's fucking crazy.
Caster's master is Fruity Loops. And Carrie gets shivers every time he comes on the screen. So
what did you find... Did you appreciate the animation quality of Psycho Pass? Because I felt the animation quality was fantastic, especially for a television anime.
One thing that I was going to talk about was I really liked how it looked. I thought it looked really cool.
It had a nice – and for like digital painting, you know, this really is like a
– Yeah, like the fact that the Dominators are CG, but they don't look
they
terrible.
Don't, yeah, it looks –
They look cool.
It looks great.
It like, gives them like an otherworldly aspect.
Yeah, it really works in
favor.
Yeah,
it does look really cool.
I appreciate the design work a lot. I think a lot of the – production design in the rooms and how, you know, familiar yet futuristic it is. That's how you can always – the mark of good futurism is
– the touch of familiar.
It's always great, and this really has that feel to it. You know?
Because this is a very noir tale. I mean, it's very noir, but at the same time, it's noir storytelling without necessarily the noir visualizations.
You have to accept that about 50% of anime is based on Blade Runner.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And you're just gonna
or
have
Streets
to,
of Fire.
Streets of Fire. Okay.
When I was looking on the Wikipedia page about it, just because I wanted to see a little bit about the, you know, the production and stuff like that, it talks about how it had a lot from L.A. Confidential too.
Yeah,
yeah. Yes. I can see that when you mentioned it. Yes,
that's the noirish. Yeah,
yeah. Like
I
throwing James, especially when they threw James Cromwell out a window.
Yeah, the hand-to-hand fight sequences were great.
Oh, those were gore.
The little you got of it was always great, and they saved up the budget for it, and it looked awesome. Color-wise, I thought it was some interesting choices on how people were shaded. That's always a good touch, specifically the villain, so you can always get a good sense of how like he's completely fucking different from everyone else because he looks completely different from everyone else.
He's very chalky.
Yeah, he's an albino,
and yet he goes unnoticed.
Yeah, exactly. So it's neat. Some neat stuff. There's a lot of subtext on the show that I think really shines through in the last three episodes. One of my favorite stories is with the high school girl.
Yes.
Art school murderer.
Great. Yeah, I love that story. I thought that was the shining moment.
Well, and you know,
it was fucked up.
I will have to say, like, the avatars getting taken over in the, that's like eerily close to something that could happen right now.
Right. According to Vince Russo, it did.
Oh.
As a wrestling writer guy, it sucks. So there's a lot of
it's a very, very good. I mean, we literally had to force ourselves to stop watching it some nights so we could get some sleep. But it was excellent, excellent, excellent. And we binged it pretty quickly, and I kind of want to watch it again at some point.
It's fun to see how Urobuchi like has zero need for a male female romance and has all the need in the world for a lesbian romance.
That's true.
That's his gimmick.
This is true.
That's what he does. That's what he does best.
Carrie was very thrilled about that revelation too.
Well, he doesn't write normal love stories.
I know, but it's not about the story being the characters at all. No one's married. No one likes each other.
I mean, Akane has a crush on Loose Cannon Guy.
Yeah. But there's nothing there, like nothing happens. So that's what I can appreciate is that, like, he has no time for it. You know, nothing happens. And I can appreciate
that. Haven't seen that movie.
Yeah. But I can appreciate that he does something different every time with it that way.
Well, and the romance is in Monica.
Yeah, they're all one-sided, though.
Well, yeah.
That's not, sort of what makes that show.
That's also not, unreal, so.
So, Chris? Chris?
Yes?
Did you find any negatives you'd like to point out?
I mean, I'm always going to see negatives in an anime because there's always going to be stupid tropes that I think are dumb.
Well, like what?
Yeah, like what? I'm curious.
That's what I'm interested
in. Yeah, like what?
The fact that it has to be this super mousy girl who is the stereotypical, like, this little anime girl that, you know, is super, you know, like, new to the game, and she has to have this all-specific look about it. Why couldn't they just have, like, a normal... That kind of thing was dumb to me. But then I got over it.
What's the normal look?
I think Akane looks pretty normal. She's drawn like an adult, which is like a lot of, like, you know, you see,
well,
like,
you can
see stuff
that,
like Bleach, I mean, which, like, Ichigo's
like,
15, and he looks like he's like
he's
27.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, come on. He's older than I am.
But I mean, on the whole, I didn't find too many negatives about it, just aside from my normal, like, ugh, I'm doing this because I'm doing it. And then once I actually,
stuff,
like, I'll put it to you this way, okay? I watched it all, but there were a lot that I just kind of didn't really, like, closely pay attention to, and I do want to go back and rewatch it again, if that tells you anything.
Okay. Yeah, it does.
I think the fact that Akane seems a little unassuming and naive when she starts out is, like, important because she's special, and it's not just like she's the only person with, like, a good head on her shoulders and, like, the entire thing.
It's not even about a good head.
No, she's
just, like,
literally special.
Yeah, she's literally special. Like, she's morally incorruptible, which is very admirable, especially for the world she lives in.
Exactly.
And boy, there are some tense moments where it was like, go ahead, pull your dominator on me.
It was like,
if I'm a criminal, shoot me.
Yeah. It's very much that she's like the embodiment of what that society wants. And she's the only person that could, she's the guardian of that society at this point. Like,
yeah,
she is
the
its
only
master
person
because
that could know what's
she could,
going on.
She could, well, she is the guardian of the future, essentially. And they know it and everyone knows it. And it's very important that she is as special and important as she is, as she's now Atlas.
Yeah.
I mean,
let's hope she doesn't shrug.
I mean, she doesn't, she doesn't discriminate against the enforcers or anything, which that's a big thing, is, you know, I think they call them dogs or whatever in the first episode. He's like, they're dogs.
They're dogs.
Now, Kinzel.
You don't want to talk to them. You don't want to engage them like they're people.
At the end of the show, did you catch who the new rookie was?
No.
Okay. Because Jason was kind enough, but it's one of those things I would pick up on, but he was kind enough to kind of put a little bug in our ear. Mm-hmm. The schoolgirl who effectively discovers what's going on with the schoolgirl murderer is the detective that gets hired on at the end.
I mean, okay.
I'm kind of surprised because, like, it'd be easy to recognize Jeremy Lee's voice in English. Because did you guys watch it dubbed?
We did watch it dubbed.
Did you watch it dubbed?
Yeah, that's the way it was on Netflix. It was dubbed.
I was going to say,
no.
Hey, man, I don't know.
I watched it subbed.
I know you opened your set halfway through.
Yeah, I watched it subbed. I mean,
but, yeah, I watched it subbed, and it initially slipped by me when I watched it because I didn't recognize her voice, and her hair is slightly different. But, no, she's a big part of the second season, which is actually kind of sad because they don't really do justice to that character. Mm-hmm. They sort of make her a hysterical weirdo. I don't know.
No,
it's a good show.
It is a good show. I will say I had a couple of issues with it. There was just a few too many for me, and especially just from the perspective of the show and where it is. I mean, I know this is, you know, you see it a lot in anime, but I felt like it could have broken the bonds a bit where it's way too much rapey women screaming and being, you know, beaten in public and humiliated, and they have to scream and run and cry and they need help. And there was a few too many instances of that. I guess the archetype of the screaming, crying woman, and please don't do it anymore to me. And
yeah, the hysterical, you know, lady, and then the total psycho who goes from like I'm super nice to like rape monster.
Yeah,
like,
that happens
seconds.
At least, you know, 4 or 5 times in the show. And that's, I mean, if you want to set the show up that way, that's one thing. But going back to the well a few too many times on it bothered me a bit and hindered my overall acceptance of the show as the best thing he's done, or, you know, one of anime's best, which I still really love the show and I really like it a lot, but I can't say it's a high point of anime, Japanese animation in general. And I still really appreciate it a lot. And I think that elements of it are some of the best things that I've seen. But as a whole, I can't say it's, I don't want to be one of those people that's like top 5, top 10, but you know, it's in the upper echelon of television shows and anime in general. It has some great ideas and followed up on a lot of those ideas. And I really liked it a lot. And I'd say I love the show. I think it's a really great show. And I do think it can kind of break boundaries in a lot of ways where it's definitely the icebreaker show, if you want to say, you know.
And also one thing I thought was fascinating was that the director was actually had said, do not do anything in this show that cannot be done in a live action movie.
Yeah, that's in the did you watch the—
No, it was on IMDb trivia.
Yeah, that's in the special features. Is one of the points of the show is that he didn't want to go crazy.
So all the designs and stuff could realistically be, you know, either CG or built.
A pile driver robot thing.
Yes.
Yeah. There are some shows where I'm glad they did not have that attitude, but I liked it for this.
Yeah, it works for this.
Yeah. If they said it like for like Bubblegum Crisis, whatever, like, oh no, it's going to ruin the show.
Well, all right.
Yeah, but I think it's fascinating. Fascinating. Glad you liked it, Chris.
Yeah, you know, it's. I don't know if it's going to make me watch more, but
oh, it will, because we're going to make you watch more.
I don't know about that. I thought you would get a kick out of this, Chris. I picked it because I thought you guys would all enjoy it. And yeah, I was right.
Did. Yes, most definitely.
Speaking of thinking that, Jace, you want to talk about Hannah?
Yes, let's talk about Hannah. Richard's decision was to watch Hannah. For me to watch it because I'd bought it.
He'd already seen Psycho Pass 2.
Yeah, I've already seen Psycho Pass. But I bought Hannah, I don't know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago,
yep.
Something. I hadn't watched it forever just because
he was Hurt Locker in it.
That's life, right? That's what I do. So it's time to watch Hannah, and
then I wanted someone else to finally watch it.
It's right. Been a long time since I've watched this movie.
Yeah, yeah. I don't like Hannah. I did not think it was very good.
You guys didn't like it at all.
Oh my gosh, it was horrible. It was like a bad live action anime to me. Like
now, Hannah, we mean the 2011 Joe Wright,
Joe Wright
thriller movie about Sarah Zay Ronan playing like a little super soldier girl that like
going
was raised in the woods to become
take
a murder
revenge,
machine
because she's a loose cant now.
turn in your badge, Hannah.
Bad. From what I remember, it's been like 3 years since I've watched this movie, but I don't remember being that bad. I remember having some decent action in it.
Michael and I watched it independently.
Yes. And, man, let me tell you something. Number one, I was bored to tears during about a good quarter of that movie. Like, there were segments I was like, oh, my God, just move along. The dubstep Tunnel of Doom.
Can I talk about the music for a sec there? When I was watching the movie and heard the score, I think it was about 20 minutes into the movie, and I was like, wow, this sounds like really shitty Prodigy. And then I saw it was the Chemical Brothers. I was like, that makes sense. They are shitty Prodigy. They are – their entire gimmick is they have been the shitty version of Prodigy.
That is true.
Whenever she's – right? Whenever she's leaving
– I couldn't believe it. I was like, I just totally called that.
Whenever she's leaving the lab – and she's going through the underground, and it's the dubstep tunnel of doom.
Yeah, she slides underneath the tunnel.
And I'm just like, this music, and I mean, okay, sure, fuck putting the camera straight and level. Let's just turn it sideways, and let's do diagonal, and you know what? Just to fuck it up some more, strobe it. Strobe the entire fucking... I'm like, what government agency is going to have
strobe
an underground
light, right. It look ridiculous.
Strobe light rave tunnel?
I really dislike that entire sequence.
That bothered the hell out of me. I mean, and, you know, there's sometimes I can understand stylism for, but that was just fucking stupid. Now, you know, the stuff with her at the beginning, when her and Papa Manna are, you know, killing shit and doing shit in the snow. That was kind of cool. The transponder being there, you know, and her flicking it, you know, whatever.
Flicking it.
Then she meets up with one of the most inappropriate children in all of cinema. That fucking 14-year-old British girl.
Yes.
That just like and then that really weird little her really weird little brother,
yeah, who likes to watch,
yeah, and it just there was so much about that movie that just it was like what, why, just why?
It's funny that she has like she's never I assume she's never seen a television before in her life,
yeah,
and she picks up the remote like she knows all about TV,
right.
Oh my God!
She
television. Let's turn it off.
Well, that is very true. She had the 1976 World Book Encyclopedia, like I did. Carried around a volume every day to learn shit.
Oh, Michael, you had that? Did you start with the A's?
I did start
did
with
you
the
just
A's.
Start at the end and pick out a random thing.
No, like literally, I had my grandfather had bought a copy of the 1976 World Book Encyclopedia, and whenever I was a kid, that was a lot of what I read. Because it was readily available, and I would carry it around, and whenever my dad would go grocery shopping, I'd sit in the truck. And
it's weird that later you'd marry a girl named Carrie.
It is. It's very, very odd. Very odd.
Michael, did you have one of those, like, book strap things where you'd strap 2 or 3 books together and throw it over your shoulder?
Like a belt, right.
Yes, I did.
You did?
Okay. Yeah, I did.
It's like Porky Pig going to school.
Yes, I did.
Chris, what did you think of this?
Like I said, I didn't hate it as much as they did. Like I said, it's been a while since I've seen it. I don't remember it being the pinnacle of cinema filmmaking that I you know that we've seen out of a lot of them. It had I don't really know a better. It very much had a European action style vibe to it.
And yes.
By that I mean like.
It was very much European cinema.
No, I mean like your...
Let's kiss.
kiss.
I don't know, like your... like Transporter-esque, like semi-Luc Besson kind of vibe to it, but not really at the same time.
I didn't really get a Luc Besson feel.
Yeah, I think it needed more explosions for that.
Yeah.
Probably true, too.
And characters actually expressing emotions to each other.
Michael Blaine says he should have known better.
Exactly. Yes, he should have.
Okay, I don't know what's going on.
I really like Hannah a lot. But I met plenty of other people that thought it was either okay or they didn't like it.
Like I said, I think it's okay. I've never met anyone that has disliked it.
So
like
I was,
these two,
I was surprised
by to
it.
About it.
Well, I talked to John Barnett.
Oh, he liked it?
Yeah, Jordan Fain liked it a lot.
Scott. I thought it was really good. Her fucking
Fame.
Holy shit, motherfucker. Man with that arrow and shit.
John Robert like liked it.
Slide down the slide.
I mean, I don't know. It's not my favorite movie or anything. It's probably not even like a top like 500 or whatever you want to break that down or something. But I really, there's nothing else out there that feels quite the same way this does to me. And that's why I like it so
much.
I
don't disagree. And I'm glad of that, though, in my opinion.
We have weird, fucked up sci-fi fairy tale Euro thriller.
I didn't even get a sci-fi thing out of it, even though there's...
Like, he's got super blood.
I know, like, there's science fiction aspect to it, but there's, like, no sci-fi to it. It was so weird. Because it kind of came out of nowhere, and I was like...
It's, like, the weirdest part of the movie, too, because they don't do a lot with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it just was there.
Like, they could have...
pretty limp.
They could have set that up a little bit better, and I probably would have been a little bit more interested.
The movie rely too much on this big mystery reveal that you're, like... It hides as opposed to teasing, and you know, and I don't appreciate that style of filmmaking so much. I kind of get turned off by it often. I don't think I've seen anything else that he's made.
Joe Wright.
Yeah,
I never saw Atonement.
I can't recall if I have. I don't think I have.
I don't think I haven't either.
So I'm interested to see what else he's done because I don't know if this is like his style of filmmaking or whatever, but. The movies felt very loose and it didn't feel cohesive where I know exactly where I'm going at all times.
It was like, very disjointed.
It was like this first time writer who came up with this idea when he was in college of a super powered girl. It's like, all right, he's watching anime. All right, what else? And
there's enough crazy stuff in this movie for me to appreciate. Just like. Apparently, like, Eric Bana just swims the fucking ocean. Like...
Yeah, but you don't even see it, so it just, happens.
I know. Like, I don't need to see it. I just see him, like, taking off swimming down to his swim trunks, just jumping in the ocean. The next time you see him, he's in Germany or something. I was like, oh, my God, he swam the whole ocean. That's amazing. Because it just, they don't even talk about it.
Yeah, nope. They don't talk about it.
Like, Hannah doesn't care about the mystery behind her. Like, she gets the opportunity to learn.
No, not at all.
Like,
she doesn't care.
I don't care.
Like,
she shoots the chick
up
in the face.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just a...
Like, there's no payoff for that, and I like that for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know. That didn't play well to me because it felt like the movie was – it felt like the makers of the film were uninterested in it and not that Hannah was uninterested. So I didn't get that vibe because her entire life was like curiosity and everything she did was find out something new. And then at the end she's just like, nah, I don't care.
You did like the weird fairy tale village thing, though, right? And the guy.
Oh,
who was
I thought the crazy guy with the
he's
with
great
the, with the mushroom room.
Yeah, mushroom
so that was cool, you know. And he was dancing around like a weirdo. And I liked him. I liked him a lot.
And Eric Bana is great, but Eric Bana is always great.
Eric Bana is great in everything he does.
Yeah,
he's always a shining point in every movie he is. That's just how he is. I mean, he's the watchable point of Troy.
He's the anti Ethan Hawke.
I like Gattaca.
I'm just playing. I just know a lot of people say that anytime Ethan Hawke's in a movie, oh, well, it's immediately a B movie or less. You know?
Yeah, that's kind of true now.
Yeah, it is.
Well, remember, he is the poor man's Christian Slater.
Who is the poor man's Jack Nicholson?
Who is the poor man's Kevin Bacon?
Jack Nicholson.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
What about Stephen Dorff?
He's Kevin Bacon.
Not on the radar?
I don't know. Now, do trust me.
He's the poor man's Ethan Hawke.
Watch... Just, like, go on YouTube, watch a clip of Cuffs with Christian Slater, and that you're like, okay, well, he's just Jack Nicholson. That's just his gimmick.
That's Why true. Why don't you put it between your knees? Or why don't you hold it between your knees?
I didn't get the fairy tale aspect of the movie.
Oh, she's a princess with a wicked stepmother.
I get it. When you say it afterwards, when I watch it, I don't get
it. Yeah, I didn't feel that imagery at all.
I don't get it, and it doesn't immediately come through very well.
Like, there's no prince coming to rescue Hannah. She goes out there to fucking murder the evil queen.
I mean, well, that's fine. That's fine, but it's just... I don't know. Okay.
Hey, I don't know.
You know?
I mean, I like Hannah a lot. I do, but it's not a movie I recommend to people at all. It's totally a thing that's just me.
Yeah, it's a... the fight choreography, like, the actual choreographing of the fight... was pretty poor.
I don't know. I like that scene in the container park a lot.
The scene in the container park?
Yeah, where she's just like knocking out the guys at the dock.
I did like that. That was probably
the
best fight.
That's what I did not like. Yeah, that was the one I saw. I was like, this looks pretty
stiff, shitty. You said it was stiff.
It was very
got
stiff.
Out of,
yeah, everyone's just
sniper.
Like, everyone's moving like this. Dan.
Well, this is just after you've seen The Kingsman. Come on.
No, I watched this before Kingsman. Yeah.
Because he
it probably made me appreciate Kingsman even. More. I was like, holy shit, this movie is awesome. I don't know. Movie didn't work. I don't think it's very.
Now, Carrie liked Tana.
Really? I thought she didn't.
She
seemed to not like it.
She liked it better than me and you did. I mean, I'm not saying that it's one of her favorite movies, but she did seem to, whenever we were talking about it, I think she liked it.
She keeps meeting the family and and Hannah just keeps meeting that family in the RV. And you don't get a sense that they even like know or care about her, but then you're supposed to care about them, and then they just kind of disappear.
Yeah, she tells her to get out of the back of the van and run to the container park, and I think that's the last time you see them.
She says she's getting out.
They get tortured.
She says, I gotta leave.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, they get tortured.
The weird tranny assassin guy has them.
Yeah, and then the kid tells where she's going or something he happens to know.
And then you don't know if they lived or not.
Weird transsexual.
Yeah, the movie just does. Well, the movie didn't really care about them. They just needed a transportation for her to get somewhere where she didn't have to walk all the time and she's not able to drive. So she's got to hitchhike with the same people.
It was very weird the second time I watched this. It was on the plane back from Spain. And the way
in the rain?
The journey that Hannah goes on is the inverse of the way I went. She goes from, like, Portugal to Spain and Morocco. Or she goes from Morocco to Spain to Portugal and then finally in Germany, I think. And I went from, like, Spain to Portugal to Morocco. It was very strange because I was watching on the plane back and that was the third time I think I'd seen it. So I was like, well, that's a trip. I didn't really realize that.
Oh, they did the hokey, I can't find you spot that I think it's been in almost every movie since 1995 or so where they're looking for someone and, they're like, oh shit, they can't get out of here. And the person looks in the room and no one's in there and they pan up to the ceiling or whatever. And they're like hanging onto the ceiling. It's such a goofy show. They did Under the Bed in this. I'm like, oh, Under the Bed.
Under the Bed.
Man, this is goofy.
Yeah, so. That's Hannah.
Yeah, I liked Hannah. But I know I'm kind of like, I don't know. People don't seem to remember it now.
I don't know. I read online a lot. There were a lot of fans when it came out, and there's a lot of...
Well, there's a lot of Birdman.
There's a lot of critical praise too.
We'll see what happens in like 5 years.
Yeah,
you know.
So did you get to watch
Mel Brooks thing?
Mm-hmm.
I did. So Mel Brooks has a new special on HBO Live.
It's pretty funny.
The Geffen Theater.
Yeah, live at the Geffen Theater. Yep.
Yeah. How recent is it?
Came on.
Okay.
I didn't realize he was doing a one-man show. Apparently this is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is it now? Yeah. It's the same show every night?
Yeah.
He's been doing he's not doing a lot of the shows. I think he did 2 months where he did 6 shows a week.
But it's kind of the new thing for people to just tell their life story in a one-man show.
But it's not just a one-man show.
Yeah, he's a piano player.
He's a piano player, but you can.
Oh, did you watch it too, Jace?
Yeah, I did watch it. Yeah, I watched it last night.
Yeah, it was funny.
Okay, so some background. I imagine part of the reason why you picked this, Michael, is because you know I don't watch very much stand-up at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've watched some Dimitri Martin, and I like Dimitri Martin a lot, and I've seen some older stuff and whatnot, but I don't watch, like, a lot of modern stuff. I've never seen Mel Brooks' stand-up. Ever.
He honestly doesn't do much regular traditional stand-up.
Which I'm actually kind of fine with, because the parts where he's doing that is the stuff I like the least.
Like, yeah, the straight joke telling. Yeah.
Yeah, like when he was like when he goes to go take a pee and he comes because he says, I gotta go take a pee and he comes back, I think the show skyrocketed in quality and I liked it a lot more. I mean, part of that was because he was talking about things that I knew and these were interesting stories, but the way he talked about Cleavon Little and Blazing Saddles.
Yeah.
I don't really like Blazing Saddles a lot. And like it's okay.
Mm. It's not been the...
It's never really clicked with me.
It's not been the funniest thing.
Like the way that the producers does. Yeah. Like I like the producers a lot. And I like that he's like, oh my God, I'll never win against Gianto Pontecorvo for Battle of Algiers and Stanley Kubrick for 2001. And then he did. And I was like, oh, that's fucking great. I didn't even know he was up against those.
It's pretty great.
I liked him singing these songs from High Anxiety and oh gosh, what's the one at the very end? The story about Hitchcock was my favorite thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's my, the 12 Chairs. The song of the song from the 12 Chairs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Hitchcock story is the highlight of the total highlight of the thing. But, like, the early stuff where he's just, like, you know, like, talking about, like, hanging out with, like, you know, his family and, like, his brother peeing out the window. I kind of got a laugh out of that because it was goofy. And they blamed it on the brother, even though he was the one who, like, urinated mm-hmm. out the window on, like, his mom and his aunts.
Yeah, they're sitting out on the stoop. Yeah.
But, I don't know. There was some stuff that didn't just quite click with me. And I don't, like, I was telling Jace yesterday, like, the 2,000-year-old man bit, I don't get it. I've never understood it. I don't know what the joke is. It's just totally gone over me for some reason. Like, I don't know a lot about Jackie Mason. What I know about Carl Reiner is mostly through his writing and not his performing. But I know Mel Brooks from both. And I know that they were all friends. They were all friends with Neil Simon. Which is the fact that they call him Doc Simon? Is that it? Was
Doc,
that what they say?
Yeah, call him mm-hmm. Doc.
That was interesting. I didn't know he was friends with Neil Simon.
How did you know they call me Doc? Sorry, that's a shining joke.
I also found it interesting about the story about the brief story about him in the military too.
Oh yeah, where he's like, "Don't ever go there."
I thought it was pretty funny. The erector set, yeah,
yeah.
Like, when it got more autobiographical and less comical, I guess is like where it really hit its stride. Now I wonder,
that's where I really liked it. I like the storytelling aspect.
Like, does he have a book? Is he going to have a book? I hope he does because I'd be interested to read it. I love the story of him meeting Anne Margaret, where she's just like practicing for whatever movie. And he's like, "Hi, I'm Mel Brooks," and she's like, "What the fuck does that mean?" Or whatever. She's like, "And."
Bancroft.
Yeah, and Bancroft. And Bancroft. Oh, and the story where he met, not Bernadette Peters, for fuck's sake. Madeline Kahn. I don't know why the names are just flying out of my head today, but yes,
well,
Madeline
those are
Kahn.
Super similar, and I don't blame you. Sometimes I get a mix them in my head, even though I clearly know the different people, but sometimes I just...
Madeline Kahn was like, oh, it's that kind of audition. Huh?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, oh, that's funny yeah. at the same time. Yikes.
Yes.
Oh, my
and
God.
And Mel Brooks is like, damn it, why didn't I take advantage of that?
Because he's a gentleman,
yeah.
Michael. Because he's a gentleman.
He's a fool.
But yeah, and it's funny that he shouts out some of the things that, like, Blazing Saddles is, like, kind of making fun of, like, Destry Rides Again and whatnot, because it's like, oh, cool. But, yeah, no, the Hitchcock thing was great. I love that Hitchcock had ideas for how they could make fun of his movies.
Right. I mean, of course, because he's smart enough to know that shit. It's
what if he good. Gets on the train, or what if he manages to jump onto the boat in time, and it's going back into the pier?
Pretty great.
But yeah,
pretty
it was great. Enjoyable. I liked it. I'm curious how close, like, I don't know, creatively it is to, like, his classical stand-up that you would hear in, like, I don't know, like a 1960s comedy album, if he had any of those, which he might not have.
Okay, so...
Because 2,000-Year-Old Man is an album.
Yes.
Album it's not a single sustained joke.
Most of his stand-up, quote-unquote, is him and Carl Reiner doing 2,000-Year-Old Man. Now, he did stand up like you talked about in the Catskills.
Yeah, the Borscht Belt stuff.
But,
like, the stuff I never get.
Yeah, but that's mainly, I mean, like he said, it was mainly like Jewish insular jokes and stuff like that. And a lot of that he never did later.
Entertaining old couples up in the Catskills.
Yeah, he never did later. And, I mean, most of his, you know, humor is then the stories about the Sid Caesar show and
the boots.
The Sid Caesar show and all that stuff. So most of his stand up were him talking about career highlights and you know, people, you know, because obviously he knew some of the giants in comedy throughout the years. And
oh yeah, I mean, he's like the central nervous system of it,
you know. And I mean, you know, him,
I mean, I wanted to hear him meeting David Lynch to help produce The Elephant Man.
Oh,
I'm
man.
Sure that's a fucking great story.
Oh, I bet. I'd love to.
Well, there's more to the story about, you know, how he wanted Richard Pryor for Blazing Saddles and they wouldn't do it. And he had
because apparently he's Richard Pryor was too much of a loose cannon or something.
Well,
loose
I'll cannon tell you Pryor. Because after I watched this, I watched a Richard Pryor documentary called Amid the Logic. And I've had a lot of free time on my hands, you know, 9 days off school.
Yes.
And they talk about that a lot too, and how it was the studio who wouldn't bring him in because they interviewed Mel Brooks in the documentary. So it was the studio that wouldn't let him in because he was buying a kilo of coke at a time.
Yeah,
yeah, I can believe it. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yep.
Martin Short doing coke. He's drinking the coke.
Yeah,
you like that?
It's a good joke.
So yeah, I'm glad y'all liked it. I'm a huge Mel Brooks.
Yeah, by the end of it, it became a fascinating portrayal of his life, and he's very. I mean, you know, it became more conversational, and that's where I think I appreciate Mel Brooks's comedy a lot more when it's way more conversational, and that's what I like about a lot of his movies more. Those moments are just. Of being regular in fantastic situations. That's what makes his movie so great. And this is kind of him in the tux and old school, you know, that's what I liked.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, that's why I like the producers, because Leo's a real character.
Oh yeah. Hell yes. And ruins that, doesn't it? Never mind. Watch Curb Your Enthusiasm season 4. I'll just say that.
Is it season 4?
I think it's season 4. I feel like it really is.
Maybe it is.
Because it was pretty early on.
Because season 5 is Kikyo.
Season 5 is Kikyo.
My swan. Kikyo.
Man.
Oh, and season 6 was the one with the plastic packaging you couldn't get open.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And the blowjob joke.
Blowjob joke.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an incredible episode.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right. So the next person to pick something is going to be you, Michael, because the way it's going to go is one person picks something for everybody, and then the person who's next, who will presumably be you, Chris, will pick something for the person who picked. So you will pick something for Michael.
Okay.
And then Michael will pick something for the rest of us. And you.
Okay. It's Festivus.
Well. Yes.
Gotcha.
Okay. Festivus.
I'll email that. I'll think about that in email.
Now do it right now on the air so we know what the future will be.
So we can all audibly groan.
So we can audibly groan and the people will know what's coming and they will be excited about it. You should have already thought about this.
Don't put the pressure on him.
I made a list of 80 picks.
Oh my God, you're such a... You are a fucking freak.
Well, fuck you. Look,
so next time
I like
I'll
to be prepared,
be
motherfucker.
Something...
Yeah, apparently.
So next time I'll pick something for Jason, and the just for Jason, and then the rest of you.
No. Next time Jason will pick something for you.
Michael, you will pick something for all of us. Chris will pick something for you.
Exactly. And then Chris will pick
something for all of us, and Jason will pick something for him.
Exactly.
Okay.
And he was getting it backwards.
Yes.
All right, well...
And then we'll eventually mix
that
cycle
up. I'm
going to
need a flowchart of this.
Flowcharts help.
We'll mix it up so it's not just like a straight circle and Jace is always picking something for me or whatever.
I got a book.
Oh, God.
Better be short.
It's shortish.
Oh, come on,
Michael.
What is
short-ish, man?
We don't have all the time in the world.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's The Princess Bride.
Oh, I've read The Princess Bride.
We've read The Princess Bride.
I haven't.
Oh, you'll like it, Chris.
And reread it. Ideally, like the newest edition that's got the added stuff.
Well, give it to me, then.
Okay.
Give it to me. Give it to me now, Neo.
Give it to me. Give it to me, Michael.
So we'll read The Princess Bride, and then...
I'm in the middle of reading another book, Michael. You're going to make me read two books.
Yeah, Kinzel. It's called multitasking.
Fine.
Hey, if the weather goes the way it's supposed to, y'all probably be flooded for a while anyway, so you'll probably get a couple more days off school.
Why don't you just... Maybe. How about this? Why don't you just pick something shorter for now, and then when we have more
okay,
time...
Okay, that's fine.
...we can do Princess Bride.
See, that's why I didn't want to pick right now.
Well, you motherfucker!
because I was trying to think of something that would be a comedy, and you're like, no, let's do something on here so everybody can grow, baby.
Well, people will want to know.
That's
it would
a
be
really
interesting.
Excellent Jim Cummings.
Wait a minute, hold on.
You sound like
I
want to
hear
from Goof
Michael's
Troop
Jason
whatnot.
Impression, having a conversation with Jason's Michael.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's hear that.
Oh, maggot, baby, baby.
Do it, Jason.
Well, I'm not appreciating what I'm hearing, and I don't think I sound like that.
Oh, look at me.
Well,
that was a little
fine.
Meta right there.
No, that's fine.
That was me doing Jason doing me.
You're out of control, Michael.
Yeah.
You're a loose cannon.
Turn in your badge.
Turn in your badge
turn in your
gun. Leave it on the table and get out.
That's
well, it's only 2 days away from retirement.
That's the name of the episode, is me doing Michael doing Jason.
Oh, no. That is not the title of the episode.
You don't just like
or
turn
Michael's
in your badge.
Always canon.
Turn in your badge. Really turn in your badge.
Turn in your badge.
So
well, just think about it, Michael.
So we'll think about it, and we'll tweet to everybody, and we'll make sure that Richard from the Plan Banter account tweets what the things are going to be.
Follow along at home.
And it won't be reading.
It can be. It's just, you know.
No, right now it's not going to work out for it to be reading, so we'll wait
yeah,
for the summer.
Better in the summer.
Yeah,
the
summer will be easier.
So.
Summertime, yeah.
And then I need to pick something for...
You need to pick something for me.
Go ahead, Chris. Pick it now.
Okay, I'll think about it.
Can okay. Leave everyone
I'm waiting for it. Somebody to pick the end of Ava for Chris. I haven't even watched the
watch
show.
Watch one
just
episode
the movie.
And be like, what
be
the hell?
No, just the movie.
Yeah, that would
which,
be great.
Like, trust me. Like,
it's like, what the fuck is happening?
Hey, no, I don't know if Chris could come back from that.
We're not going to make you watch the end of Evangelion.
No, don't make him watch Evangelion while he's there by himself all that time.
Like the movie, like the movie is fucked. That's why I like it.
The whole show's fucked.
Yeah, but
fucking,
the movie is especially.
Fucking insane.
Well, yeah.
It's great.
Like,
it's one of the best movies ever. It's so crazy.
Yeah, like, it's like Hannah. There's nothing else out there quite like it.
Man, I don't know. I've seen Leon the Professional.
Oh, wow. And Transporter 2.
Transporter 2, right?
Well, all right. So sadly, we must leave you guys. But in the wait between episodes, there's always things for you guys to do. Such as go to our website at www.planbanter.com, home of Plan Banter. You can find us on Twitter at Plan Banter, and you can email us at planbanter@gmail.com. We also have a Facebook page, facebook.com/planbanter. Go like us. And while you're liking us on there, why don't you go like Chris Kinzel Photography? And everyone be sure to check out the Twitter for Chris's photography, at Kinzel Photos. You know, if you want to listen to some music, you can find Jason's band, Clinch. At Clinch Band, and clinchmusic.com and reverbnation.com/clinch. And also facebook.com/clinch. You can also find our friends, Engineer Nerd, of tvandfilmtoys.com. You can find them on Twitter, at Engineer Nerd. And you can also listen to him on the Action Figure Blues podcast, which is found at actionfigureblues.com. You can follow them on Twitter, at AFBlues. Our friend Grey Matter Splat, at Grey Matter Splat. Our friend David, at FakeEyes22. Our friend Lemon Juice McGee, at Lemon Juice McGee. And our very special pal, Newton Gimmick, at Newton Gimmick, him of InfiniteHollywood.com, and a sometimes contributor to UnderscoopFire.com. Shazam!